Welcome back. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. There are currently 120,000 women in prison in the United States. California now holds the largest number of women prisoners of any other state, nearly 10,000. Two-thirds of these women are serving time for nonviolent drug or property-related crimes. 80% of them have experienced domestic violence or sexual abuse at some point in their lives. Many of the women incarcerated on violent charges were connected to the crime of defending themselves against and sometimes killing the person who abused them, their partners. In 2002, California became the only state in the country to pass a law allowing evidence of abuse to be used in court. The documentary Crime After Crime, directed by today's guest, Yoav Potash, chronicles one woman's journey toward freedom through this law. Deborah Piegler was abused by her boyfriend and was charged in connection with his death. She was convicted of murder and threatened with the death penalty. She ended up getting 25 years to life. She was 20 years in when the habeas law was passed in California. Two pro bono lawyers, Joshua Saffron and Nadia Costa, took on her case, and they expected they would work on it for maybe just a couple of months. It ended up taking 7 years. There are many women like Deborah Piegler still behind bars, many women facing nonviolent offenses. So we're going to talk about what it will take to change sentencing laws and how realignment in California's prison system will affect women inmates. Yoav Potash is a film producer, director, and editor. Last year, he directed his first feature-length film, Crime After Crime, The Battle to Free Debbie Piegler, horribly abused, wrongfully imprisoned, one signature away from freedom. Yoav recently co-directed the one-hour documentary Food Stamped, his half-hour documentary Life on the Inside about the nation's largest prison for women began airing on PBS in 2007. And Yoav joins me here in studio. Hi, thank you for coming in.
My pleasure.
It's great to have you. We're also joined by Brenda Klubein. Brenda is a domestic violence survivor. On October 22nd, 2008, Brenda was released from prison after serving 26 years for defending herself against her abusive husband. In prison, she founded the group Convicted Women Against Abuse to help women inside break the silence around abuse. She's featured in the film Sin by Silence. It's a documentary about the first inmate-led battered women's group in the U.S. prison system. Brenda recently founded a nonprofit called Every 9 Seconds, and that group advocates on behalf of incarcerated victims of domestic violence. And Brenda joins us from Southern California. Hi, Brenda. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, Rose. Hi, Yoav.
Well, it's so great to have you back, Brenda. And Yoav, I want to congratulate you because I understand you just won the Robert F. Kennedy Journalism Award for the film Crime by Crime.
Crime After Crime.
Crime After Crime. Yes, and what's amazing about what you're both doing is that when you're talking about reform and raising awareness about women in prison, this is still a relatively young movement, right?
Absolutely. I'm telling people that all the time. If you compare it to getting women the right to vote, or you know, getting the civil rights movement, those are movements that began, say, in the 60s or earlier, and this is a movement that really picked up in the late 70s, early 80s, and by this is a movement, I'm talking about the domestic violence prevention movement, and then within that, a sort of a subset of that, you might say, is looking at, well, what happens when victims of domestic violence cross paths with the criminal justice system? And that's an even younger movement I think Brenda and her colleagues, I'll just call them generally, deserve a lot of credit for bringing attention and eventually getting California to become the first state that has a law that allows, and I'm just going to correct you slightly in terms of how you introduced the law that California has and no other state has. It's not just that domestic violence evidence can be presented in court, because you can do that in a lot of states, in most states now. But what California is the only state is allows inmates, so people who have already been convicted, to go back to court. In other words, sort of retroactively saying, I know you say I'm guilty of murder. I know that that's already, you know, post facto, that's already happened. But there's something you didn't know. There's something that was never talked about in court at the time that you convicted me. And that was that I was abused. And I want to introduce that evidence now, even though it's 2012 and I was convicted in, say, 1983. I still deserve the right to do that. And California is the only state where a victim of domestic violence who's in prison can do that.
And why couldn't you do that in 1983?
Well, there were no laws enabling you to do so. You could submit anyone can submit a habeas petition, which just is a petition that says, I'm in prison and it's wrong and I want the court to look at my case again. But 99.9% of habeas petitions are thrown out. You need a specific reason that's going to allow a judge to say, wait a minute, this is an exception to the rule. And then through the law that Brenda and others helped pass, which is just a section of penal code called 1473.5, but through that law, those victims of domestic violence now do have those specific grounds. So if they can just show that they were victims of abuse and that that's a significant factor in the crime, then the judge really is mandated by law to at least give them a hearing. It doesn't mean they have to automatically release them, but it means, hey, give them a chance. Hear the case, find out what the facts are, and then let's proceed from there.
And Brenda, you wanted to jump in there?
Yeah, well, you know, first of all, in 1983, there was no battered woman syndrome admissibility regarding defendants that were even charged and or arrested for protecting their lives against their abusers. And so in 1992, after the public hearing legislative public hearing was held at CIW and 1107, Penal Code 1107 went into effect, then that allowed the battered woman syndrome to even come into play. Now, unfortunately, the trier of fact, the judges along the way, I believe, misunderstood the intent, the original legislative intent of that inaction. And because of that, 1473.5 came into effect in 2002. And now, with the Sin by Silence newer legislation, that's even refining it more, where AB 593 even goes a little further and says, maybe you were allowed an expert, but the problem was that expert, either because of the judge or instruction or whatever, wasn't allowed to say specifically how it affected a defendant. This then closes that gap and then allows the original intent of the law to protect these people. Now, unfortunately, it's just been so long that these incarcerated survivors haven't had a voice. And California is, again, because we were the first law in 1992, the first state in the country to come up with legislation in regards to battered women syndrome, and then to go further in 2002, and then even today we're still going further with AB 593 and AB 1593, which enacts parole board reform, where we hold them accountable in not finding suitable people that were victims of violence, domestic violence.
And Brenda, how often is this law used now that it's on the books?
1473.5 has been used. I was the 20th inmate to be released under 1473.5, you know, and what was so great about it, it wasn't just that, you know, the court didn't want to hear that I was a victim back in 1983. The victim wasn't on trial, so they didn't want to hear it. So I was able, in 2008, after my attorneys worked for more than 4 years on my case, to go back to court and submit evidence, hospital reports, police reports, and all these kinds of things, affidavits, so that the judge could either say, yeah, we're going to retry this case, or no, we're not, and let's just be done with it. And that afforded that opportunity. Now, for those people that have been excluded to this point, because 1473.5 says currently, if you did have an expert, then you're automatically out of the box. But the new legislation, AB 593, will allow these women, if you did and it wasn't able to be taken into its full context, then you can repetition to the court. And yeah, California is way ahead of other states on that aspect.
Hmm. Well, and what's so amazing about both of these documentaries is that you really tell personal stories. So it's follow the lives of these women. I mean, Brenda, in your case, you served 26 years for defending yourself against your abusive partner. And Yoav, in Crime After Crime, you tell Debbie Pegler's story. And I mean, the first time I saw it, you just feel like you're on this journey with her, thinking, when is she going to get out?
Right.
It actually hurts because she deserves to get out much sooner than she did. How did you first learn about Debbie Pegler?
I heard about the case from Joshua Saffron, one of her attorneys. He's someone I happen to know already. And so he told me, hey, I've started this interesting pro bono case. And of course, you know, he knows that I'm a filmmaker. So I think he was kind of, you know, giving me the bait, so to speak. And honestly, I didn't take it at first because... And then I later ended up, you know, being on sort of his end, trying to explain the story to people, because when you first explain it, it sounds a little messy. People tend to ask right away, well, did she do it? You know, meaning did she kill the guy?
Right.
And then when you say, well, kind of, yeah, but there's all these other factors that the court didn't look at. People, you know, there a lot of people tend to just tune out right there. Well, she killed somebody, therefore she's in prison. She deserves it. End of story. So simple, black and white. But of course, what I learned by meeting Debbie was that it was not so simple at all. First of all, in terms of her level of involvement in the actual murder, she didn't physically harm Oliver Wilson, her abuser and pimp, herself at all. She never laid a harmful hand on him. Two guys stepped in. They killed him. But she allegedly was the mastermind. So that's how she was convicted of first-degree murder. And then, second of all, the court never looked at the years of abuse that led to that one night in the park. And by years of abuse, I'm talking about she was whipped with a bullwhip. She was forced into prostitution. So, you know, for years he was milking her for money. And then finally, he was abusing her daughter. At least one of her daughters, he was, you know, sexually molesting her. And I think when Debbie and her family discovered that was the thing that pushed her to become desperate in terms of looking for solutions. And even at that point, she still tried to have the police intervene. Mm-hmm. And Oliver was in fact arrested for assault with a deadly weapon against her, but he only spent one night in jail and then was released. So then she was totally desperate. And that's what led her to allow these two sort of tough guys to try to help, quote unquote, solve her problem. And of course, In a sense, they only ended up making it worse. And then she was put into a corner. She actually never had a trial by jury, as is often the case for many women who are victims of domestic violence and end up in a position like hers. They become threatened. And she was threatened with the death penalty by the Los Angeles District Attorney's Office. And therefore, her lawyer strongly advised her, you've got to take a plea here or else you're going to be put to death. And so that's what she did. She took a plea thinking that she could be paroled in half her minimum sentence. And her sentence was 25 to life. So she thought, all I have to do is go to prison, be a good citizen in that prison, be the best person I can be. And in 12 and a half years, which is a long time, but she kind of thought, well, I can do that. I can do it. I'll get out of prison and my children will still, you know, I'll still be able to be their parent. And of course, what she found out after 12 and a half years of being a great citizen in prison and earning college degrees from behind bars and teaching inmates to read and write and doing all sorts of other really impressive things, she found out that the parole system in California is, just put it lightly, pretty screwed up and pretty corrupt, though it has gotten a lot better recently. But there was no way she was going to get parole without some additional help. And that's where the Habeas Project came in and provided her with these two lawyers who were going to attempt to get her out using 1473.5, using this law that only California has that allows inmates to retroactively introduce all that evidence.
Incredible. Let's play a clip from Crime After Crime. And this is Debbie Piegler.
You know, I sit in prison wondering, was there a better way? Was it a different way? Like today, I know there is. You know, there's shelters and, you know, people out there available now. And it took me being in prison almost 15, 17 years before I even realized that I was a better woman. And it's so funny that somebody else had to tell me I was.
That's a clip from Crime After Crime. That is Debbie Piegler. She took care of women who didn't have anything. She used her prison job wages, managing electronics, to buy things for women who didn't have jobs or had poor ones. Brenda, you spent 26 years behind bars. Mm-hmm. I mean, what was amazing is to watch Debbie continually have hope and live for the next day, thinking that eventually she'll get out. Can you give us some insight into just what that process is like? What are those days like for you?
Well, you know, yeah, I can. And one of the unfortunate things is there are still women just like Debbie still trapped in the system, you know, 20 plus, 30 plus years later, that are still sitting in prison today that have had to protect themselves either through their own specific actions or those of other people, like in Deborah's case, that protected Deborah and her children and unfortunately are still sitting there. Glenda Crosley, for example, she's over 65 years old, and in one night things changed in a matter of moments. Every day that you're incarcerated and you're away from the people that you love and your life with your family, you're reminded every day about what happened and how do you move forward from that, and will it ever end? I remember there were many moments when I wondered, would it end? I went to the parole board 28 days prior to being in court, actually less than 28 days prior to being in court, and they told me I was still considered an unpredictable threat to society and did not release me, found me not suitable. But on October 17th, the judge said, "I'm sorry and good luck to you, ma'am," and released me. So
just like that.
That's why now AB 1593 is huge for California, because then it goes a step further and says, you know what, we're going to hold the Board of Prison Hearings accountable and we're going to have them give an exact reason and stop using excuses not to find these survivors suitable. Mm. Enough's enough.
And that is Brenda Klubein, a domestic violence survivor. In 2008, she was released from prison. I should say on October 22nd, 2008,
yeah.
Brenda was released from prison after serving 26 years for defending herself against her abusive husband. And her story is told in the film Sin by Silence. It's about the first inmate-led battered women's group in the U.S. prison system. We're also joined by Yoav Potash. He is director of Crime After Crime. It is a film about Debbie Piegler. She was abused by her boyfriend and charged in connection with his death. And Yoav, you've received so many awards. Sin by Silence has received so many awards for that film. I should say that's produced by Olivia Klaus. You have shown this film across the country to lawyers. What is the reaction? Because we've had a few conservatives on the show who've said, you know, a couple years ago, I was that kind of throw them away, lock them up, throw away the key. That's the mentality I had, mm-hmm. or the, you know, what I believed in. But once you hear these personal stories, your mind begins to shift and your opinions on this begins to shift.
Absolutely. Well, we've had some lawyers really, or especially law school students, say, you know, you've changed how I'm going to practice law. Some of them specifically saying, I'm getting into this type of law, you know, because of this film or because of learning about these types of stories and this problem. So that's been amazing. And then, you know, with older lawyers, they're also, you know, some of them flabbergasted. Some of them say, ugh, you know, I've seen this type of thing and it's disgusting. And thank you for shedding light on it so that the rest of the world knows more about it. You know, in general, it's been very enthusiastic. I mean, even last night I was at the launch of a new, it's called a Family Violence Appellate Project in Berkeley. And there I had the opportunity to meet some of the Alameda County district attorneys and give them the film, and they were eager to see it. And, you know, I have a lot of faith that some district attorneys actually get it. Mm. And in some counties, up and down California, prosecutors' offices have cooperated when this new evidence has been brought to light. And they've done what I would say is the sensible thing of saying, oh, we didn't know that 20 years ago this person was a victim of domestic violence.
Absolutely.
Yeah, now we know, and we can do the right thing. Wow. And that's almost what happened in Crime After Crime, almost, in that Debbie's attorneys went to the Los Angeles District Attorney's office, met face-to-face with the DA, Steve Cooley, and he gave them a deal in writing saying, you know what, you're right, we didn't know about this, we're going to help Deborah Pegler be free. And then mysteriously, a few weeks later, he flip-flopped on his own written word, and that is what led this to become, you know, quite possibly the most contentious of these cases so far, and the you know, the legal battle dragged on for years after that.
And you're putting it kind of lightly, because what he did kept her in prison. And when I saw that film, he was just running for the attorney general's spot in California. And I had no idea he was even connected to this case, right? How would we without a film like this?
Right, right. Yeah, I you know, I'm glad that the film, or not just the film, really Debbie's case as it was unfolding, was able to be covered by news agencies up and down the state, you know, the San Francisco Chronicle, LA Times, and all the local news, CBS and Fox and everybody. In fact, Fox, which obviously leans to the right, was sort of the harshest on Cooley in the way that they kind of poked fun of his flip-flop and everything. And that race, of course, ended up being so close.
Yeah.
You know, Cooley thought he won. He even declared that he won. So to whatever extent Debbie's case was kind of a feather on the scales that might have made a difference, you know, I'm certainly glad it came out the way it did.
Yeah, we can't do it justice. I mean, you've got to see the film, because the scenes with him and the flip-flopping are the audience was horrified. You could tell that it was the first
time. That's true.
They learned about that.
Yeah, at Sundance, like, there was like an audible like gasp when that sort of twist was revealed in the film. But there's many other twists that I'm not giving away on the air here. So don't feel like we've spoiled the film, because there's still, you know, plenty more after that.
Hey, Rose.
Yes.
There was something that I wanted to mention, and I think that it's very important. I think both Crime After Crime and Sin by Silence, you know, Sin by Silence, as you know, we were with you some time ago, a year and a half or so ago.
Right.
We've come even so far since then. We've as well traveled across the United States, and we've done district attorneys conferences, and even in California, and judicial conferences, and like I said, are now working with Fiona Ma, and we'll be going before the Senate on these two bills.
And Brenda, hold that thought. I'm so glad you brought this up. We're going to take a quick break, and then after the break, we would like to talk about these new movements. Today, we're talking about the films Sin by Silence and Crime After Crime. We'll be back after this.
And I'm Matt Martin, general manager of KALW, joining Rose Aguilar here in the studio. We're going to be going back to this important conversation in just a moment. But right now, we want to ask you to keep this conversation going by keeping this station strong. KALW is past the halfway mark of its spring membership campaign. We're doing great. The response this morning has been excellent. Keep it rolling here with a call or a click. 800-525-9917, KALW.org.
800-525-9917. Thank you so much for joining Independent Radio, keeping us strong. We had such a good morning. Let's continue that momentum. KALW.org. Online KALW.org. I've been on the air since about 6 this morning. KALW.org, 800-525-9917. 100% of our show is funded by you. We could not do this without you.
Two important things to know in this hour. One is that we have the films that we're talking about today,
yes.
Crime After Crime and Sin by Silence. Two DVDs, really remarkable, as Rose is saying. You need to see them to kind of get the full impact of these stories that we're hearing about today on the program. Those are yours, both of them, for a $150 contribution to KALW. 800-525-9917, KALW.org. And your support during this hour will have additional impact for KALW if we can make it to our goal of 20 calls or clicks. 20 calls or clicks before we go to the BBC at the top of the hour. Patricia Lyon, one of our great supporters, will give an additional $500 to support KALW. Rose, we've already had 7 people contribute during this hour.
Oh, great.
Let's maintain that momentum. Be the next person to call or click 800-525-9917 or KALW.org.
And we haven't even asked. Thank you. 800-525-9917. Thank you, Patricia Lyon. $150 contribution to KALW. We will send you these incredible DVDs, Sin by Silence and Crime After Crime. I was blown away when I saw these films, and I just rewatched them in the last week, knowing we were going to do this show. It's so important to keep this kind of radio alive because, like Brenda Klubein just said, since she was on last year, there's been so much new momentum. So support that kind of radio where we follow stories. We don't just leave them in the past. We bring them back. 800-525-9917. 20 calls or clicks before 11 o'clock, and we'll get an extra $500. KALW.org.
This isn't just radio about hearing what's wrong, hearing the problem, and then saying, oh, another hard day at the office. No, it is about us saying, what do we need to do as a society, as a community, to make things better? And Rose and your call, the team involved, try to find people in this community who are doing important work. That's what this station is about. And you know, this morning, we've had some people who have really dug deep for KALW. We got a contribution from someone who said, I've been out of work for 2.5 years now, but I feel I have to donate for what KALW gives me. Thank you so much. That is what inspires us. It's not about the dollar amount. It's about the choice to participate. 800-525-9917.
Thank you. 800-525-9917. Thanks for supporting independent radio. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. You can find more information about our show at yourcallradio.org. You can also listen to past shows there and sign up for our newsletter to find out what's coming up. Tomorrow, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. And if there's an article you'd like us to mention tomorrow, if you have kudos for a reporter who did a good job, we'd love to hear from you. Today we are talking about women in prison. There are 120,000 women in prison in the U.S. Here in California, 10,000. California now holds the largest number of women prisoners of any other state. 2/3 are in for nonviolent drug or property-related crimes. 80% of women prisoners have experienced domestic violence or sexual abuse. Many are serving time for defending themselves against and sometimes killing the person who abused them. And we're talking today about two documentaries that really focus on this issue and go in depth and take a look at the laws that are both helping and hurting women. And they also focus on what needs to change. The documentary Crime After Crime, directed by today's guest, Yoav Potash, chronicles Debbie Pegler's journey towards freedom through a law that was passed in 2002 that allows inmates to go back to court to bring in evidence of abuse. We're also joined by Brenda Klubein. On October 22, 2008, Brenda was released from prison after serving 26 years for defending herself against her abusive husband. And her story is told in the other incredible documentary, Sin by Silence. And we'd love to hear from you. If you have any questions about this issue, about women in prison, if you have personal experience with this, if you were in prison or if you work with women prisoners, what do you think of the laws? What needs to change? And what do you think about what Yoav is calling a young movement? And it sounds like it's moving very quickly. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also leave a comment at yourcallradio.org. And before we go to calls, Brenda, I wanted you to finish your thoughts. You were talking about all of the changes you've seen just in the last year alone.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we were given the opportunity to work with Fiona Ma, who is a very strong policy director for the state of California regarding domestic violence, and she is sponsoring and supporting both AB 593 and AB 1593. AB 593 amends the habeas petition law 1473.5 to include and widen the scope for people that may have had an expert, but it wasn't given the proper weight that it should have been, or weren't able to petition earlier because they didn't have the police reports, but they have other documentation. So that opens that and widens that so that more women can get into that and take care of and hopefully obtain their freedom. AB 1593 will start holding the Board of Prison Hearings accountable for not finding DV survivors suitable for parole. Stop allowing them to use excuses. Stop retrying these women and start taking into account their abuse.
Right.
These things are so huge. And California, again, is the first.
Yeah. And just for the unanointed out there, when we say DV, we mean domestic violence. And when Brenda refers to an expert, she means a domestic violence expert in court on the witness stand who can explain this is what this person was going through. Sad to say, judges often don't get it. Mm-hmm. They sometimes don't get it even when the expert is there to kind of hold their hand. Part of the flaw in the law as it is now is that women who maybe had an expert but only presented half of the evidence or even a sliver of the evidence, right now they don't get a second chance to present the full scope of the evidence because, quote-unquote, they already had an expert. But
that's why AB 593 is so huge, because
exactly.
That changes that, and that's important because women need a chance.
And when you think about, where were we with domestic violence law in 1983 or even 1995, we have a significantly different consciousness about it now, and hopefully it will continue to evolve in the future. And that's what all of us are trying to do. I think the efforts of Brenda and of Sin by Silence are primarily focused in California right now for obvious reasons, and the efforts with Crime After Crime are really all across the country, just in a sense trying to get these other states to catch up to where California is now. Because none of the other states even allow any of these victims of domestic violence to go back to court. So we have significant contact with legislators and momentum in New York, New Jersey, Texas, of all places, and Illinois, and hopefully soon many more states.
Well,
Sin by Silence is also working with other states as well. We're not just focusing on California, but I think California is huge because that's where both of these films were made, and that's where it starts. That's where the groundwork is laid. And once it's passed in one state, it tends to go like wildfire, just like 1473.5. When it took effect, and when Penal Code Section 1107 took effect, there are other states that now allow testimony regarding abuse. They may not all allow experts, or they may not and do not as of yet allow the writ process, but they're getting there. And they're working with both us and Crime by Crime. And so I think it's important that everybody knows that, when you're a victim of domestic violence, it's about breaking the silence. Because until that silence is broken, more women feel trapped, more men feel trapped, more victims are trapped until that happens. Mm.
Well, let's bring our listeners into this conversation. Let's hear from Brad in San Francisco. Hi, Brad. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for allowing me to air my comment. And I'm simply calling to thank Ms. Klubein and Mr. Potash for the efforts that they've put forth. It certainly reinforces Don't Whine, Organize, and the power of individuals organizing and leading a movement forward. One other comment I would add, when I heard the word spreading like wildfires, because there are people who are hungry for this type of leadership and hungry for this type of sophisticated organizational power that can actually move the communities forward and bring justice to the community. It is possible, but only especially when we have folks like you who lead that effort. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brad.
And it's amazing.
Thank you.
Can you both talk about what the movement looks like today behind bars? How are women organizing right now behind bars?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that, you know what, these women have hope. They have more hope today knowing that they're backed by their legislators, and their legislators are fighting on their behalf. And so it doesn't have to be, you know, you don't have to feel like you no longer have hope. You know, it's educating, by educating society, and people just, you know, Yoav touched on it earlier when he said, you know what, most people think, you know what, they killed someone, you know what, let's just let him sit there. But now that they're understanding that it's not just that simple, that there are so many things that led up to what happened, and that these people didn't just decide one day to take somebody's life, but it really was the protection of their own, that people become enraged and their spirit becomes on fire and they want to do something. They want to be heard as well, and they want to be part of this movement, and that helps the women that are incarcerated by them writing them, by them supporting them, by them writing letters of support for parole hearings, and then just letting them know that, you know what, their voices are being heard out here. Their voices are being heard.
Right, and they see the women who've been released, and that's obviously very inspiring to be able to rattle off a list. You know, hey, Brenda Kluban got out, Deborah Pegler got out, you know, these...
Yeah, well, we want to give them a voice. So let's hear a clip from Sin by Silence, and this is a compilation of women talking about their personal experiences.
My dream was a family, children, and a house.
Hey, he was my knight in shining armor. He was the most excitement that I'd ever had in my life.
He was sweet and angelic, and he brought flowers and was kind.
And it all started with a slap and then being thrown across the room like I was nobody. All I wanted to do was protect myself. It cost me life in prison.
Welcome, ladies, everyone, to Convicted Women Against Abuse tonight.
It starts with a backhand and ends with a gun in your face. I'm so glad for this group that I found out that it wasn't just me.
These women are in prison because of the process, not because of their cases, not because of the facts of their cases.
So I just wrote a simple letter asking the governor, we've been in prison for multiple years, we're abused women, we've suffered, we are offenders, but we're victims, and everybody signed it. And before I knew it, there was this big, wow.
The efforts by the Convicted Women Against Abuse got the legislation passed.
It changed laws, it changed lives, it made a difference.
Not only have they survived the unspeakable, they try to keep others from following the same path that they were on.
If I can reach out to just one person, then it's mattered. It's all mattered. Me being here for almost 26 years will matter.
And that is a clip from the film Sin by Silence. The voice you just heard there is today's guest, Brenda Kluban, who served in prison for 26 years for defending herself against her abusive husband. She got out on October 22nd, 2008. And we're also joined by Yoav Potash. He is director of the film Crime After Crime, The Battle to Free Debbie Pegler. Horribly abused, wrongfully imprisoned, one signature away from freedom. And you know what's also amazing about these two films is really the access and the access you got, Yoav, is it's a fascinating story because I understand that the California Department of Corrections does not allow the media to film. I was at San Quentin a couple weeks ago at their Green Jobs program, just taking photos of the gates and things. And people came over and said, no photos of people.
Right.
They're very strict on that. How did you get this incredible access? You have a great story about this.
Oh, yeah. Well, there was kind of a two-pronged approach. First of all, I was a member of the legal team officially. I was the legal videographer, which sort of, ironically, if you look at my career as a filmmaker, that was actually the first, you know, way before Crime After Crime, the first job I got in San Francisco behind a camera was as a legal videographer. I was taping depositions of, you know, cases where, you know, one software company was suing another, that sort of thing. And then when I began this effort to document Deborah Pegler's case, I spoke with her lawyers, and we decided that the best way for me to have a chance to film Deborah Pegler was essentially in that same role as a legal videographer. So I would go in with the lawyers, I would wear a suit, and the prison officials essentially saw me as a lawyer with a camera without a law degree, which might not make a lot of sense, but it made enough sense for them and made enough sense for me. And I was able to be in a room alone with Debbie and film those interviews with her. And eventually those interviews were in fact crucial to her legal strategy because it became crucial for her story to become public, for it to be in the news, to put pressure on the DA's office and eventually the governor's office to try to get her out of prison. So that was not really a ruse in the sense that there was no connection to the case. In the end, there was a very strong connection to the case. And then the second part, so that was how I got interviews with Debbie alone in a concrete room. But I knew she led the gospel choir in prison and was getting college degrees from behind bars. And I was like, well, there's got to be a way I can film that. And I spoke with the public information officer at the prison, and he almost immediately, you know, told me, well, we have a policy. You can't film a particular inmate. If you ask us to film any inmate, you know, Deborah Pegler, we're going to say no. He told me that point blank. But then he also went on to say, but if you want to film a category of inmates, that's what we'll allow. And then his complaint was, and nobody ever wants to film all the great programs we have here at the prison, all the great volunteer programs. And, of course, I knew Debbie was involved in most of those volunteer programs. And so I pitched to him that I would do exactly that. I would film not only the gospel choir and the education programs that Debbie was in and the electronics manufacturing program that she was a part of, but also programs she was not a part of, like the firefighter training and the arts and crafts. And I made a whole separate documentary about all of those programs. But over the course of doing that, I kind of built an archive of Deborah Pegler footage that came very in handy when making Crime After Crime.
What's the status of those programs? How have they been affected by budget cuts? They're being cut
a lot lately. Mm. Yeah, you know, we're in this budget crisis mode, and unfortunately, a lot of that stuff is getting axed, and that's sad because through those programs is where a lot of inmates find a new life and really turn their lives around and find some sense of hope and you know, a reason to actually rehabilitate. And there's been this tension over decades now in the California Corrections Department whether or not rehabilitation is actually part of their mission or not.
Well, let's go back to callers. We have a number of callers on the line, and we have just about 6 minutes left. Let's hear from Gino in Monterey. Hi, Gino.
Hi, Rose. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for calling.
Hi. I'd like to ask Ms. Kluwein a question, if that's all right. I wanted to just know more about your journey, Ms. Kluwein, and your motivation. You were in prison for over 26 years, and you still seem to want to make a difference and change the system. And I just want to know why, what motivates you.
Well, I think it's about, you know, it starts with breaking the silence of abuse, and then it moves even past that. It's my spirit. I think it's so important that victims today have a voice, that they have a chance and know that they're not alone, that they can move forward. And that's why my advocacy didn't even end in prison. That's why I moved forward to even start my nonprofit today, because I want to be part of making that difference. I want to be part of letting people know that that was the worst part that I felt. I knew what it felt like to be alone. I knew what it felt like to be a victim. And if one person doesn't ever have to live the nightmare that any of us led, then that's where we start. That's where we start.
And we thank you for the question. We have a related question from Sarah. She says, I saw Sin by Silence. What an incredible life-changing experience. I finally felt for the first time that I was not alone in what I had experienced. I'd love to know what life has been like for you now out of prison.
You know what? It's been an amazing journey. And the biggest thing for me was being able to be a part of this new legislation, because California is so huge to be on the forefront, and, you know, people can go, if they're interested, they can move forward, they can go to the sinbysilencebill.com website and be a part of signing the petitions and being part of making sure this passes, because this is huge. This is where we stand in the forefront. This is where we make the change. This is where we make the difference for more victims that are still incarcerated today. And I'm loving life. I'm moving forward. I'm trying to do my best to make a difference. And that is what I'll do till it's done.
Well, and I want to play one more clip from Crime After Crime, because this really does summarize some of the legal battles and the evidence tampering and some of the stuff that goes on behind the scenes that we often don't hear about. So in this clip, you are going to hear from one of the pro bono lawyers, Joshua Saffron.
At most, Deborah should have been in, at most, for 6 years, which was the maximum for manslaughter in 1983. Having been in for 24, 25 years, most of her time, she's been illegally incarcerated. If anyone's breaking the law, the biggest lawbreaker has been the DA, the court system, the prison system. It's really a crime after crime that she's been subjected to, the bigger crime here. The bigger injustice in this case is that, to the extent that she was culpable for anything at all, she served her time decades ago, and yet she's still in there. And it's just not right.
And that is Joshua Saffron, one of the pro bono lawyers representing Debbie Pegler. Again, at that point, Yoav, the audience was just in shock, saying that she should have served 6 years.
Yeah, it's pretty mind blowing, and that's something the DA admitted to in writing in 2005. So it's not just her lawyers say so, and that's a claim. That
did she get any compensation or anything, an apology or anything?
No, unfortunately, the DA's office, has never returned to their 2005 position after they reversed on it and then decided to oppose, Deborah Pegler and her freedom. Though what I will point out is that the DA's office has subsequently cooperated on some other women's cases. So while I don't ever expect them to apologize, or at least not this DA's office, maybe once there's a new DA in office, not Steve Cooley, but someone else in the LA DA's office, perhaps there would be an apology or something to that effect. But even under Steve Cooley, because he is still the DA until a new one comes in, they've changed their approach on some other cases, and that gives me hope that they learn their lesson, even if they're not willing to admit it. Mm. The proof is in the pudding.
And 30 seconds, Brenda, what's next for this movement? What's next for you?
Right now, it's just having the hearing in June before the Senate regarding AB 1593 and AB 593. I think we need to continue this movement forward. I think we need to continue to give these incarcerated survivors hope and a voice. And I think that as long as we continue to move forward, when I was in court, really quickly, when I was in court the day that I was supposed to be released, the judge said, you know, this all should have been taken into account, and good luck, and I'm sorry, ma'am. Mm. You know, what does that tell you? That tells you that our system's been broken, and from here we can move forward, and that's what
We'll definitely continue following this. Brenda Klubein is featured in the film Sin by Silence. Yoav Potash is director of Crime After Crime. Thank you both for joining us.
Pleasure
Thank
to be here.
So
I'm a big listener and supporter of the station, and I hope those DVDs move for you guys.
Thank you. Thank you for listening.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. I'm Rose Aguilar. Thanks for listening.
And I'm Matt Martin, general manager of KALW, joining Rose here in the studio after this incredible conversation, the kind of thing you hear a week in and week out on your call and on KALW. If this is a station, if this is a program where you hear stories that you go, boy, that is not easy to listen to. That's challenging. It makes me think, makes me wonder what kind of society I'm living in. And yet at the same time says, there are people out there doing the work, connecting, saying, we're not going to give up. We're going to try to make things better. That is what we hope to do in public radio and what we're trying to make it happen here at KALW. And that kind of approach really only happens in listener-supported, non-commercial media. Please, give a call right now.
800-525-9917 or online, kalw.org. We will send you these two incredible DVDs, Crime After Crime and Sin by Silence, for a $150 contribution to KALW. If we can get 20 calls and clicks in the next couple of minutes, how are we doing, Matt?
We are at 15.
Oh, good.
We are in striking distance of being able to get that match. Which is not a match. It's a challenge put forward by Patricia Lyon, a devoted listener and supporter of KALW. Thank you, Patricia. Show your support now. Join all the folks like Pamela Braswell in Albany, Cameron Galloway in San Francisco, who's a fan of your call, who appreciates the station's community focus. Catherine Larson, also here in the city. These are people who called 800-525-9917. And did something real simple. They said, I like this station. I believe in it. I listen. Therefore, I'm going to do what I can to support it.
800-525-9917. Get these DVDs. Share them with everyone you know. Crime After Crime, Sin by Silence, $150. We'll send you these two DVDs. And I loved what Brad said earlier in the show, Matt. He said, this just shows me the power that individuals have to make changes and the power that these women have behind bars to change laws.
No, that's when you said, hey, what kind of organizing is going on behind bars? I think most people think there's organizing going on behind bars.
Right.
That's the kind of story that gets told on KALW, that about people who are struggling under very difficult circumstances but trying to make change. Together, we can keep this conversation going. Make a call or click 800-525-9917 or KALW.org. I want to thank Lisa Bradley. Bradley is a new member in San Carlos who went to KALW.org. She said, thanks for the short and sweet pledge drive chatter. I love BBC News and listening to the lunch menu in the morning, and Rose is my hero.
Aww, so. Thank you. Thank you so much. 800-525-9917 or online, KALW.org. If we can make this 20-caller click challenge, we'll get an extra $500. Thank you, Patricia Lyon. 800-525-9917.
We have an open line at 800-525-9917. This is your opportunity. If you can pledge at the $150 level, get these two DVDs, Crime After Crime, Sin by Silence, something to share. Hey, do you know somebody who works in the legal system? Do you know somebody who works with domestic violence survivors? Or just someone who you think like, hey, this is a story they might find powerful that might open up their mind some. Your support, you can have this as our gift to you, then you can then pass on to someone else.
800-525-9917. It's about educating society. That's what Brenda said. How can we change minds without educating people? 800-525-9917. $150. We'll send you both of these DVDs. Share them with friends and family. Pass them around your circles. 800-525-9917. Support independent radio or KALW.org. And I think we're going to make it, Matt.
Let's try. Let's one last push.
One last call. 800-525-9917. Thanks for supporting local independent radio.
Thank you.